Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Burchie. Justin's here.
Hey, everyone.
And our guest this week, always happy to have him back on the show, returning champion and CEO of Right Stuff, it's Sean Kleckner. Hey, Sean.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
We're doing fine. Happy to have you back. It's been quite a while since we've talked to you. Typically, we get in touch around, you know, as we approach the holidays, and that's sort of where we're at here. But I guess, you know, the standard opening question is, how are things going at Right Stuff?
Well, things are going great. Even though everybody likes to say that sales of physical media keep dying, I still seem to be selling more and more of it every year. So I think there's still quite a life in our market, and there's lots of people that are still very interested in anime.
Well, the whole physical media is dying thing, I've found that when people make that argument, it's always, they never add the addendum, like, maybe in 20 years, onto the end of that. Like, I could see a future where everything is just streaming, but it always seems like extreme hyperbole whenever anyone's like, oh, that's it for physical media. No one's ever going to buy a DVD again. It's like, I don't, you know, the need for that will generally always be there in some capacity.
Well, physical media is very convenient, and yeah, the prices of this product has all come down to a point where, yeah, you could stream the product, and a lot of people do like to do that, and some people like to just be able to watch it at their convenience on their DVD player or their Blu-ray player, or they want to have their kids be able to watch it in the car, or so on and so forth. You know, plus there's always the people who, you know, like to collect the product, which I think is great. I mean, a lot of these new products have some really neat features on them that you're not necessarily going to see on the streaming. It might have some non-physical pieces that come with it. I think most of it really just comes down to convenience. It's a very inexpensive way to consume media entertainment.
Well, to an extent.
Well, yeah, I guess that's in the eyes of the beholder, but the fact of the matter is that it's still, you know, if you want to buy products and keep them or collect them and so on, I mean, obviously you can't do that if you're streaming something.
Right.
And some of these materials, you know, some of these programs aren't available on streaming for that matter.
Right. Actually, a lot of them aren't. the streaming libraries don't stick around forever. And yeah, I mean, it always seems like the argument comes from a place of, well, I wouldn't invest in a DVD business right now. Yeah, no one really necessarily would start a new business. But the suggestion that, oh, this is all going away tomorrow it's weird to me when people make that argument. I'm sure you hear it.
My warehouse would beg to differ.
Right. So, I mean, in terms of sales, like, what's changed in the last year? Have you seen a change? Are things shifting over to other products? Like, what kind of trends are you seeing?
Well, I mean, in the anime industry as a whole, I mean, we had this kind of growth market that was, you know, exponential there. If you go back to the 90s through the early 2000s, and then kind of a precipitous drop after that, downward after there was some, you know, retail bankruptcies and so on. You know, that also caused a dearth of new products to come into the market because the Japanese kind of went into an isolationist mode and made a bunch of products that really weren't mass market, of mass market interest. You know, I'm seeing a lot more products coming back out now that are more of interest to a larger audience. You know, they're more of an interest to American fans than the, you know, products if you go back 4 or 5 years ago. You know, it takes a little bit of time for that to cycle out in Japan and to cycle back over to here and the committees and stuff to look at markets outside of Japan again. I definitely have seen a rise in the number of products that are aimed towards collectors. If you look at the beginnings of the anime market, you know, when you go back into the late 70s, the 80s, the early 90s, I mean, that was a collector's mostly only market. It's returning to being more of a collector's market than a mass market medium than it has in the past. Definitely have seen that. I also have seen, as these products get more and more inexpensive, there's people that are buying more stuff at one time because they can. This concept of binge watching is really taken off over the course of the last few years, where they just watch the whole show at once, or big chunks of it at a time.
Right, and so are you seeing a direct correlation between something that's successful on something that is successful in terms of streaming numbers, like in terms of a streaming audience? Are you seeing a correlation between that and sales? I mean, are you seeing like a direct, okay, this is how it's streaming? I mean, giant hits aside, like Attack on Titan, that stuff aside, if something's really popular streaming, do you see a bump in sales?
I think that would depend a little bit on the title. But, there is definitely a correlation. Streaming has become the new TV. When everybody could watch their favorite anime title on Cartoon Network, there was always a lift in sales on the physical media product at the same time for that. The streaming concept, or YouTube or iTunes or some of these other forms of consumption, really has taken the place of that TV preview. I think you guys can remember back in the day, especially when Jenny Ann was putting out $250 plus box sets of single discs and so on. People would not buy a lot of those simply because they couldn't test a show. They didn't know if they're going to like it, and they didn't want to invest that kind of money. Well, now you can take and sample some of these shows before you buy them, and I think that definitely has turned into a correlation for people who are wanting to buy a physical good to definitely want to purchase them. Now, there's going to be some customers who have no interest in purchasing a physical media product at all, and for that that customer, really the streaming and or free advertising based viewing has really kind of created a new market for those people who wouldn't necessarily have bought anyway. You kind of have to look at the market in segments. You've got the people who only stream or only watch a product in that direction, and they're probably not going to buy physical media at all. They might buy merchandise. I mean, you see a lot of those people at the anime conventions. Anime conventions have become much more social now than sales mediums. You've got the customer in the middle who has interest in shows, and they definitely buy the stuff that they're interested in. They may stream some of it. They may do a combination of both. And then the top end of the market being the collector who's going to buy it because they want to enjoy it and then be able to keep it.
So for the customer that doesn't necessarily want to buy physical media, obviously, maybe there's no way to look at sales data and come to this conclusion, but are you seeing a bump at all in merchandise sales? Because generally, like, if someone's a fan of something, they do want, like, a little piece of it. They might not want the show itself, but they want, like, a keychain or a backpack or a wall scroll or a t-shirt. And, I mean, you guys obviously sell all that stuff, too. So are you seeing sales on that with the shift over into streaming replacing, sort of the television experience like you were talking? Are you seeing a bump in merchandise?
Definitely. I mean, there's definitely more merchandise buyers. The biggest issue is there's not enough merchandise available.
Really?
If you get into some of these titles that there are fans of, there may not be any domestically available merchandise for those customers. So, I mean, that is a conundrum that the licensors here in the States really have to start looking at more, in my opinion. I mean, you're seeing some of it. I mean, there definitely is more merchandise now than there has been, but not to the level that I think could be taken advantage of in the market if somebody could really focus on that. And some of that, I'll be quite frank with you, is an issue from Japan. I mean, the convoluted rights situation for some of this stuff makes it really difficult to bring over merchandise sometimes.
Well, not only just importing, but I mean, I would imagine, merchandise is the sweetest plum, so they don't really want to hand those rights away to maybe anybody. It's like, if you want to sell merchandise, you can, buy our stock and sell it there, but you're not making your own licensed products.
Well, it's really not that, Zach. It's more of, this merchandise sells really great in Japan, so therefore it's worth a lot of money for a licensing fee, even though the title might be mid-grade and is not going to have a huge merchandise potential, but would have some.
Right.
It's a different market, and you know, a lot of times, as we all know, the Japanese look at their market and think that that's what the market is everywhere, and it's not the case.
Right. Huh, interesting.
But, so, I mean, there definitely is a need for more merchandise. I would love to have merchandise for some of these titles. And I know that there's definitely a... everybody is looking at that, but it is like anything else, even streaming, you know, for the longest time, it was difficult to get anybody in Japan to agree to let that happen. So I'm hoping that that will start to open up, and we'll see more of that. And as you mentioned, there's more people watching some of these stream shows, and they can, there's activity that's easy to see that might make it easier for someone to convince the license holder for the merchandise rights, which isn't sometimes, by the way, is not necessarily the same license holder as the video rights or the book rights or anything else, so that makes it even more complicated. But hopefully they'll let loose with more of this stuff, and you can look at, you know, some merchandise that isn't necessarily limited only to, you know, Sailor Moon or Dragon Ball or so on. You know, the other issue, of course, is cost, and you have to make some of these types of items in large quantities to make them affordable. So, you know, you can't really make for a, you know, a second tier or third tier title, you know, 20,000 keychains. I mean, it's, they're just not going to, that's not going to sell.
Right.
Can you talk about some of, like, what the logistical nightmare is in just getting stuff from Japan? Because, I mean, that seems like a logical conclusion to a lot of fans. And why is that not a good idea?
What do you mean? I'm not sure that I understand. Are you talking about importing merchandise,
yes,
Justin, or something else?
Yes. Yeah, so say, well, like, I mean, you have all this free merchandise coming out of Japan. Why not just get a truckload of that?
Well, a lot of those products aren't necessarily licensed for sale outside of Japan. That's number one. So bringing them over here is gray market, and that's kind of frowned upon. You know, secondly, it is expensive to bring product over from Japan, especially when you get into something that's really light but really huge. Say, for example, a while back there was one of these ginormous Totoro plushes. I mean, it was as big as a, you know, a good-sized sofa. Well, yeah, I'm sure I could sell some of those over here, but just to get them here would cost hundreds of dollars. So you have to kind of look at what is it that you're trying to sell, and to have a profit margin on this stuff, you have to mark it up. So then you look at the customer and say, well, this I'm going to buy this, and I'm going to sell it to you for X price. And they say, well, I'm just going to buy it from Japan and have it for the same price. And, you know, sometimes they can do that. You know, the wholesale market in Japan is completely different than the wholesale market here in terms of pricing and how things are paid for. And there is a lot of logistics if you're going to just import directly from Japan everything. It's going to be much more, you know, not only much more profitable, but timely to manufacture the product on your own, even if you had to manufacture it in Hong Kong or China and bring it over here. I would love to be able to bring some more of this type of product over, but it is not as simple as just making a phone call and saying, hey, I'd like to have 50 of these special tchotchkes that you made for this title. You also have to find them. The other big issue that Japanese retail is significantly different than it is here. I mean, for example, let's say that I'm a toy store, and like a big giant toy store, and I buy in, you know, 10,000 pieces of some, you know, action figure. Sometimes those things are returnable. You can return the ones that you don't sell, or you might get markdown money to mark them down, or for that matter, if they sell really well, you can get more of them. Japanese retail has done more as a just-in-time thing than anything else. They make it, and then they don't make any more, unless there's some huge demand for it. So you might have a difficult time getting it, other than having to buy it from yet a secondary source that's a store that had to buy it from the wholesaler. So, you know, there's definitely some logistics issues there that make it a little bit more complicated than just, hey, I'd like to get the merchandise rights for this stuff and make it so that I can sell it to the customers here.
You mentioned sofa-sized Totoros, and I'm sort of curious if there is a license, like a particular franchise or something where you're seeing like a thirst for merchandise and you wish you had it, but it's literally just a case of you can't get it to sell it. Is there like any particular franchise out there that you're seeing that for?
That's a complicated question. There's different fans like different things, as you guys know. Some people are only fans of the really blockbuster budget, top budget shows like Attack on Titan and so on. And there are some merchandise for Attack on Titan, but there's still only a certain amount of it. And, you know, you don't see, I don't see like Attack on Titan action figures that are easy to come by, or, you know, there might be some shirts, or there might be some keychains or wall scrolls or something like that. It does seem like the merchandise that is available for titles here is limited to very specific categories. That is what I see is the issue. So if you do have a title that's popular, you have a choice maybe of some, like a wall scroll or a keychain or maybe a wallet or a bag, but not anything else. Where I see the demand for merchandise that's really being unfulfilled is not necessarily the top tier titles, but everything below that. Anything that's in the middle that might be a mid-range seller or a fan favorite type show, you know, you don't see a lot of merchandise for that. I think that's where we run into the issue. I'm trying to think of specific titles right off the top of my head, but which is a little bit more difficult. But, you know, let's say we look at like Nisekoi, which was a good seller for us. I think that's an NIS title, if I remember right. There's no merchandise for that. I mean, there's just not. There's a very, very limited amount of things that I'd be able to sell to the customer. You know, I'd like to be able to have merchandise for all of our shows, for example, but it's not necessarily going to work.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting that made me think that, especially even with something like Attack on Titan, you're saying, like, well, there's some merchandise, but there's nothing that's really easy to come by. We get this stuff, like, as it airs now. Like, you know, in the past, back in the 90s and the early 2000s, we were still getting stuff. Some of it was 10 years old, some of it was 5 years old, some of it was 3 years old. You know, something coming over the same year it was released was sort of unheard of. And now that we're getting the stuff right when it airs, it takes a good 6 to 8 months for merchandise to start coming out in Japan. When the show's a huge hit, it's like they're always caught with their pants down. It's like they never quite see the demand coming, even for something where like Attack on Titan, where the manga was gigantic. So, of course, the anime is going to be huge, too. And they just didn't have anything ready until, like, the end of the year after the show had stopped airing. Like, that always happens. So I guess maybe we're caught in that now, too, where if Japan's not getting it for 8 months, it doesn't even start coming out. Even the little things like keychains and stuff, we're not going to get it for who knows how long, you know? So that gap.
Well, timing is a big deal. I mean, you're definitely hit nail on the head there. So, I mean, if you have something that has come through on a simulcast and it's really, really popular, there's likely going to be very little merchandise for that, even in Japan, because for any number of reasons, one being just the approval process. You know, if they do make merchandise for it, you know, there's a giant bureaucracy to run through of anything to get approved. Right. So, I mean, there's that factor just even in Japan alone. And then there's also the concept of, well, why would we want to license merchandise to the Americans and have them start making stuff when there isn't that same merchandise available in Japan yet?
Right. Yeah.
They get really freaked out about stuff being out here but not there.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And different things are popular here than are over there. I mean, there's any number of titles that have been really popular here, but not necessarily really popular over there. I mean, if I remember right, like Samurai Champloo is a great example of that.
And right now, the example is Space Dandy by the same guy.
Right.
Very
right.
Popular here, nothing there. There's no merchandise at all. that can be a little frustrating. Before we move on from specifically DVD retail, can you give us a quick rundown of some of your top sellers in terms of like DVD and Blu-ray?
Well, sure. I got to think of this right off the top of my head. I mean, you've got the top tier stuff. I mean, we've done, you know, quite a bit of Attack on Titan. Sailor Moon is going to be really, really strong when it comes back out next month. I do definitely see that going to be a big seller. We've done real well with Sword Art Online. Kill la Kill did really well for us. Cardcaptors being a fan favorite coming back, that was a great product for us. Boy, it's tough to do us without like running a report. Haganai Next was good. Excel World was good.
Wow, all right.
Well, that's as much as I can come with right off the top of my head. No. I mean, there's just so many titles coming out. I'd almost need to start planning a little ahead when we have these conversations.
Right. Well, no, that's fine. It's interesting to see some Aniplex titles in there as immediately coming to mind as top sellers. because there's, you know, so much complaining about the price points on those, but obviously that isn't deterring people from buying them.
Well, there's different types of customers. You know, the fact of the matter is that the Aniplex titles, although they are more expensive, generally are things that the collector-type customers do gravitate to. They do put themselves price-wise outside of the reach of the mass-market customer. I know that there has been some of those products put in, you know, to a streaming form and so on so that those people can view those. But, you know, as I mentioned earlier, you got the three types of customers. And as we move forward in the market, and you know, the big thing that I would definitely say that's interesting in that piece is the younger fans are the ones, obviously, that can't really, you know, cough up that kind of dollars. But there's a lot of fans right now that are in their late 30s, their 40s, their 50s that grew up with this stuff. You know, they have some money. If they want to buy this stuff and they want to collect it, they can afford it. Right. So, I mean, there's a change in the marketplace just there as well.
Okay, so I wanted to talk a little bit about manga. Last time we talked, you were doing some print-on-demand stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious what's the progress report on that about a year later?
Well, I have to say I'm quite disappointed in that. We've had a real difficulty, you know, convincing some of the publishers to be able to work with us on print-on-demand. But I also have noticed since I've been bugging these guys about that, much more of their product has come back into print. So if anything, I can say I'm pretty happy that, you know, we're convincing people that, you know, leaving a, you know, volume 6 and 7 out of a 21-volume book set is not a good idea. Unfortunately, though, I mean, there's only been some limited stuff that we've been able to do on the print-on-demand. I mean, I continue to pitch it. I still think that it's a great idea to fill in some of these holes. I am getting some pushback, being that, you know, Japan doesn't like some of this idea, which I'm rather confused about that. But, yeah, I'm rather disappointed, to be honest with you. I really thought we'd be able to take that a little bit further than we were able to. Not that I'm going to give up on it. I still think that there's marketability for that. There's a lot of publishers. I mean, I'll give you a great example. I mean, Digital Manga's catalog, a whole bunch of it is completely out of print. And I know I could sell a bunch of that if I could, you know, move it into that program. But you can only do what the partner is interested in doing. So we focus on, you know, just continuing to talk to people. And if there's something that we can do to work with them on that, I absolutely want to have the ability to do so.
Does that remain the biggest frustration with manga sales, not being able to get, you know, having volumes 1 through 5 and then 7 through 12 or whatever?
Well, that definitely is one of the biggest problems still. I mean, it's not near as bad as it used to be.
Right.
As I mentioned, a lot of these people, I think, are waking up and realizing that their book sales are definitely affected by not having volumes of their series in print. But you only can get them to print them so fast, and I imagine they're still in a position of trying to accumulate back orders. Retail for books has changed in that landscape significantly over the last 2 or 3 years, and it still is a problem. I mean, it's not as bad as it was, but it is still a problem.
Yeah. I've heard some minor complaints about print-on-demand as far as, like, the paper quality, the overall, you know, quality of the binding. Is that something that you've been hearing back or has been improved upon?
Well, definitely print-on-demand has changed completely in the last 5 years. I mean, it's there's different ways to do this and different machines that are available now that were never available before. I mean, some of these machines, you actually just put a file to it and they spit a book out at the end. I think that really comes down to how much money you're willing to pay to make the book. I mean, it's going to be significantly cheaper to print on a web press and print 1,000 books than it's going to be to print one at a time. When we print our print-on-demand books, for example, like the Hitalia books we've done, I mean, we're up to the we did catch up with Hitalia as it has been released in Japan. You know, we go with a, you know, very heavy ultra white stock. The binding, I think, is excellent. I've had no complaints on that whatsoever. If you were to go to the really cheap paper stock, I mean, there's a couple of the publishers in the market, I'm sure everybody knows them, that are book buyers, that were using, you know, newspaper grade paper when they were printing their books. And yeah, I mean, people are going to complain about that. It yellows really fast. It's dingy looking. It's not very bright. And you can choose that paper if you use the print on demand press if you want. It's cheaper, but I don't think is very good. I think I can print a book that, when you look at it, and if I print the book and you hold it next to the book that was printed by the other person, you know, with that cheaper paper, you're going to say, wow, that's the best looking book ever.
Right. How would you characterize manga sales, like, overall right now? Would you say it's just remaining steady? Are you seeing any kind of decline? Like, just how would you characterize it overall?
I think manga sales have had some growth over the course of the last year. There was a significant drop-off there when Tokyo Pop left the market. A lot of that slack has been taken up from the Kodansha folks and the Yen Press people and Seven Seas and so on, Viz especially. There's definitely an uptick in that market. The growth level of that is certainly not double-digit, all over the board and huge, huge growth. But there's still growth in that market, absolutely.
And actually that reminds me, one of the, you mentioned publishers not being ready for when something comes back on Vogue, and they've got some of these volumes still in print or still available and some of them not. Over the summer, or rather this year, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure has seen like this giant explosion in popularity, and Viz is only just now getting around to like starting to reprint these volumes and release the rest of the books. As a retailer, do you see the demand for that coming before they do?
Well, we'll get people coming in and asking for it,
right?
And if it's something that's out of print, that's what we have to tell them. The question really comes there, and I can't comment to Viz's situation on that, but maybe they were in a position with contractually that they couldn't print more of those books without asking Japan for approval.
Right.
It could be that they just didn't have room on the schedule. I don't really know what the reason would be. And I know they did reprint them, and we sold a whole bunch of them. But yeah, like anything else, the tastes of the fan are finicky, and you never know what they're going to throw at you.
Yeah.
It's tough sometimes. But yeah, we see the demand, coming into our call center and the people coming in through email and so on. I can tell you what people want, and I do try to communicate that information to the various publishers that we work with, whether that's books or DVDs.
Right. So you're sort of on the front lines on that situation because, like you said, the fan taste is really fickle, and it moves faster than ever now that we, with the streaming, everyone's just watching the stuff right when it airs on Japanese TV. And so the tastes are going to change even quicker. So you're sort of at the front lines of that, and you're the person who winds up communicating to these companies, hey, I have like 1,000 people here who want to buy this. You want to go ahead and put something out,
Well, and there's the other difference in the book side is the addition of the ebook stuff where people can pick it up on their Kindle or Nook or whatever. So some of that stuff gets filled in that manner. But I will tell you that the collectors still don't like that. They get really upset. If they want to collect those books, they want to have them on their shelf, and that's not going to cut it, that they have to pick the middle one up on an ebook or something like that. But, definitely we hear about it. Our call center is real busy, whether it's, answering email or taking the calls from the customers. And we do try to log, especially if it's something we don't have. We can track the demand of items, whether they're canceled or if they come in and somebody orders it and we can't give it to them, or somebody inquires on a specific title, and we can then push that information back to the publisher and say, I know you don't think that X book is really that important, but maybe you should run some because I can sell a couple hundred of them right away if you could just give me some, which is what I was hoping to do with the print on demand, to be frank with you, but that just hasn't come together like I was hoping.
Yeah, well, in a situation like that, it's like you kind of have to wait for something to hit. Just in the last like 2 years, we've seen more success stories in terms of something actually being, a big hit. Everyone's talking about it. Years will pass where you get season after season of shows and nothing really catches on. And just in the last like couple of years, suddenly things are starting to catch on again. So, that's nice. And it must completely change, the nature of the kind of demand that you see coming into your store.
Well, absolutely. The other thing is kind of to touch on what I had said earlier. There was a particular period of time there where nobody was licensing any products.
Right.
The titles were, Japan wanted still the same prices they were getting from before. They weren't getting them, so the titles weren't getting licensed. And because of that, there was a retreat to making, the whole Moe concept. A lot of that came from Japan retreating back to the otaku market in Japan.
Right.
So I think that that has passed, and now we're going back to, okay, we're going to make products that are more mass market oriented, or more products that we feel are action oriented, that are more sellable on an international basis. And that's starting to really kind of filter through now. And then you also have a little bit of a delay too, for example, just for the fact that even if that was last year, if somebody's going to dub it, it takes a while to dub a title and actually push it out into the mass market here. You can put it out in streaming on, you know, on simulcast or whatever, but that's different than being able to place it out to, you know, for example, the dub fans who are very vocal.
Exactly. Okay, so moving on to your own releases, Nozomi and Lucky Penny. So what success stories have you had in the last year on those labels?
Well, I have to tell you, a lot of the stuff that we've been putting out on a recent basis has been more of the real classics titles.
Right.
You know, we still have really great success with Utena. I mean, that's been a great title for us. But if you move into the Rose of Versailles, Cobra, Cat's Eye has actually been much stronger than I expected, which has been really nice. I don't know if that's simply because we said we would do the entire show or because I know it was only released in part before, but that's actually done very well for us. You know, I've been really pleased with the titles that we've been putting out. I'm trying to think of, right off the top of my head, you know, really, and those are the ones that I'm thinking of that really were the strong ones that I didn't expect right off the top of my head, that I thought would do okay, but really have done better than I'd expected.
Well, with Cat's Eye, you know, the last guy that released that, I don't remember who it was, but...
He was an asshole.
Well, I don't know that I would say that. But, you know, the price point was a lot higher, too, because it was done on an on-demand basis as well.
Right.
So
with, you know, was in print.
Everything changes over time, and you know, we did go out and get, and the materials I think that were used for that weren't quite as strong as I think the materials we're using. We're using all the remastered materials. I think people are excited about it. I like the classic shows. I mean, really, when you get into some of these older programs, there is a different feel to them because, you know, they're cell animation, a lot of them, and they're not the new, you know, shiny CG stuff that fans, I know that they want and expect, but at the same time, it gives a different feel and a different concept to how the product is presented to the actual fans. I mean, I will say you get into some kind of weird 80s nostalgia, like, you know, the ending theme for Cat's Eye is rather bizarre, but it has its own quality in terms of, you know, its nostalgia factor. You know, we still have done, you know, really well with, I mean, we recently re-released Junjiro Romantica. That seems to be a really perennial title for us. So I've been really pleased with that. I mean, just thinking off the top of my head, the other one that I was really very pleased with was, you know, Princess Nine, which as a sports anime, you never know what you're going to get with that. But it's a great show. I mean, it was a reason why we wanted to grab that and bring it back, and it's done really well.
Right. So with some of this classic stuff, are they meeting sort of tempered expectations and you're not, like, you know, losing your shirt on them? Or are they, I mean, what, because a lot of this stuff is about sales expectations and when you hit break even and stuff like that. So is this, are these classic shows, and you're releasing a lot of old stuff, are they hitting those expectations?
In some cases they're hitting expectations, some cases they're definitely exceeding. Mm-hmm. We're looking at that collector market, and these shows, a lot of them are touching that demographic that I mentioned earlier, where you've got a lot of people who have been in the anime business, you know, anime market, that, you know, they've been customers for a while, or they've gone out of the market and then they've come back into it. You know, they might be in their 30s or 40s. These are stuff, shows that were put out in that time frame, and these are from the 80s. They're, you know, from the early 90s. You know, that was the stuff that they wished they could have watched back then but couldn't because it wasn't released here. So I think tapping into some of that market has actually been really good for us. I mean, there's been other publishers that have kind of tapped into that same market, and as a retailer, I will tell you, we sell those very strongly. So I'm really pleased with that.
So Discotech stuff is doing pretty good.
Well, like anything else, some of those titles do really great, and some of them don't. I mean, it just depends on the customer.
Right. One thing I did want to mention, I'm not sure if this is just, well, it's just the materials, or if you're putting extra effort into these, but, you know, I watched your release of Cobra, and I thought, you know, watching those DVDs on, you know, I was watching them on a PS3, which has an upscaler in it, but I honestly looked at those DVDs and thought, well, I don't feel like I need a Blu-ray of this. I don't understand how the show could look better than this. It was just remarkably crisp, and I'm not sure if that's because you're just using remastered materials or if you guys are putting extra work into it. I mean, they look great to me. And some of these older shows, like, maybe doing Blu-ray doesn't make sense because, you know, you're not really going to be able to recoup that money. But I'm curious, is there extra effort in, or would you just put that credit towards the materials you're getting?
Well, I want to say thank you very much for your kind compliment. That's really great. It's always nice, and I'll definitely let our production people know because they like that kind of feedback. I think that they do a fantastic job, and we definitely are putting more effort into those products. We do get remastered materials sometimes. Sometimes we still have to work with those materials beyond what we get. It really depends on the publisher, and, you know, sometimes we've had to go back and say, you know, can we go back to some film material? Sometimes we've, you know, gone back and said, well, I mean, we know there's a better release of this in Japan. You know, why is it that the material we got isn't up to snuff? And then, you know, we're able to access other materials. It's kind of just dependent on the title. I mean, we do put extra effort into it here in terms of the way that the product's encoded. A lot of these shows are encoded at a much higher bit rate than a lot of the discs out there are, simply because we know that although people would like Blu-rays for some of these titles, we're just not going to be able to likely to recoup the cost of adding that extra, you know, layer of authoring and programming, and I'm sure Justin can speak to that, that would be necessary to put these out on a Blu-ray disc. I don't think we're going to see any more sales than we do with the discs that we're making, so I want to make them still look as great as I possibly can, knowing that I'm serving a market that really wants, you know, that's most likely a lot of them are older and they're collectors.
Right, yeah. And to wit, like, you know, Cobra looked great, but Princess Nine I thought looked really rough, and I assumed that was a materials issue.
Well, you can only get the materials that you get.
Yeah, if I recall, that one hasn't been remastered. If I recall, that one hasn't been remastered in Japan at all, right?
No, it hasn't. And that's actually, if I remember correctly, was actually produced on video, not on film. So you're limited to the video of the era, which that's a 90s show. So, I mean, the 90s shows are really tough because those are a lot of shows in that era were produced only on video. And, you know, video quality in that time frame isn't quite the video quality of today. And there's really only so much you can do with it. You know, for example, if you go back to some of the cell-based animation, I mean, when we clean it up and make it look really nice, you can see all the scratches. And you can see all the, you know, the different things that you really probably didn't see back in the day because those, you know, the video quality wasn't near what we're trying to present. The other piece that we run into is a lot of frame blending and stuff like that just because of the way that the masters are made. So we do our best with the materials that we get, and if we don't think that the materials are good enough, we do our best to find the best ones we can get. But, you know, you're limited. There's only so much. Now, I'd love to put out some of the older shows on Blu-ray, believe me, but even then, if they're made on video, short of upscaling them, I don't know that there's much that I can really do.
Yeah.
I mean, with film, you can go back and do a rescan and make it, you know, really get a crisp image.
But
that's tough to do when the product is made, you know, specifically on videotape and it's specifically limited to a resolution.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, some of the stuff they're pulling these, I'm sure they're pulling these masters out of a, you know, dusty box in the back of a warehouse or something.
You know, sometimes they have problems finding them at all.
Right.
I'll be honest with you.
Yeah. So, I mean, so 2014 at this point, from a retailer standpoint, I mean, you've got the holidays coming up, but for announcements and everything, you know, new licenses, it's basically over.
Nope.
Do you have a... Well, okay.
Think maybe you need to check the website out for, you know, the next little bit.
Okay, all right then. So you've got one other thing. All right, it doesn't make what I'm saying not true.
Well, we'll see what you think.
For 2015, looking forward to next year, mm-hmm. Is your release strategy going to change at all? Are we going to see anything different, or are you staying the course?
I think actually 2015, our release strategy will advance. I think we're going to have more releases next year than this year.
Okay.
I've got stuff that, you know, that's in the pipe, that's in process. I mean, we announced a few titles at Anime Expo. Some of those titles are rather lengthy. For example, that Yakitate Japan is a huge show.
Yes.
I think we're going to do 3 box sets on that. So there's a lot of episodes being worked on at the moment, and there's a lot of things that that I think the fans will be interested in. But, you know, I don't want to really start announcing stuff today. But there's things right. coming, and you watch the site, and they'll definitely be we'll be talking about them.
In terms of the Nozomi releases, which sort of was designated as the kind of, okay, you know, if we're going to put out a limited edition of something or something with, you know, mm-hmm. special fancy packaging, it's going to come out on this label. You know, you said maybe more releases in 2015. Are we going to see more stuff from that label, like something with a, you know, tchotchkes or fancy box or something like that?
I'm hoping so. I'm hoping so. I mean, we've got a few things I think that'll fit that label for next year. You know, again, we're putting that Yakitate out on the Nozomi label.
Okay.
So there's definitely things coming. It's harder and harder with some of these titles to put them out on that label simply because you got to find something that really deserves that extra treatment.
Right.
Cost wise as well, that somebody really wants to pay a little extra for, because, you know, adding those tchotchkes and stuff does cost money.
One thing I wanted to ask about before we get into Twitter questions, so beforehand, you know, you guys were releasing older titles, and that was definitely, you know, definitely your wheelhouse. Like, if there's a show from the 80s or the 90s, you know, it's like, well, it could be a Right Stuff license, or a Nozomi license, rather. Now you've got a lot of competition. You've got
That's
companies
true.
Like NISA and Discotech reaching into the back catalog. Are you seeing your prices in terms of licenses for those older shows going up?
Yes.
Okay.
It does make the extra competition does make it more difficult to acquire titles. And the fact of the matter is, because people are looking for some of these things, it does make it a little bit more difficult cost-wise to do that. You know, just like in any other market, if you get to the big guys and what they're bidding, they're going to have to bid more as well. You know, we try to look for titles that we think are, you know, are going to make a profit. I mean, you know, let's be honest, we're all in a business here, and I got to pay my mortgage. But I don't know that there's plenty of stuff out there right now that's still unreleased, that's back cataloged, that I think people would have interest in. And we're introducing, I think, a lot of these classic titles to customers who, you know, it's new to them. I mean, I think there was an old, I think it was like on NBC back in the 90s or something, they always used to say, it's a rerun, but if you haven't seen it, it's new to you.
Right.
The fact of the matter is that a lot of these titles, you got to convince some of these people that they should try it, because it's not the new blockbuster fancy CG stuff. But a lot of customers really do get into it and find it interesting. I mean, a great example of that is Cardcaptor Sakura. I mean, I think that you're going to see a lot of fans that are going to get into that show and really enjoy it. I mean, it was a very strong seller for us, that maybe haven't watched some of the older programs before. They're really kind of been more focused on the new stuff. So I think that there's plenty of room for, you know, the competition for those type of titles, and I think there's still plenty of stuff out there that's interesting. And, you know, keep in mind that, you know, whether we buy it or not, you know, we still try to partner with those companies and give them feedback and you know, work with them to sell their products.
Right, so you're going to find yourself, you know, in a bidding war for a 35-year-old show.
Well, I think there's a limit to a bidding war. There's only so much some of this stuff is really worth based on the sales volume that you're going to achieve.
It's just interesting that now there's so many, you know, you got at least 3 companies that are seem to at least be interested in reaching back into the distant mm-hmm. past and doing more classic stuff. It's good for us old timers because, you know, we can't get enough of it.
Well, it's only a matter of time before there's Blu-ray root search.
Right.
Please God, no.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. All right, let's...
Are you having some bad flashbacks there, Zach?
Yes.
Vagina monster.
Okay, all right, we got some Twitter questions for you here. Justin, do you have anything else before we get to these?
No, you can go ahead.
Great. Okay, well, Squirrel Micah asks, why did you pick Grimes, Iowa for your headquarters?
Well, firstly, I'm from Iowa, so we're going to be in Iowa somewhere. We originally had our office in Des Moines, which, you know, is the capital of the state, centrally located. When we ran out of space, we looked for space that we could find that we could use, and the current location that we picked up really was suited for our needs, and it would happen to be in Grimes. Grimes is on the northwest side of Des Moines, if anybody really wants to know that information. But in terms of Iowa, it's really a very convenient place to do business because of where it is. I'm sitting at the intersection of the transport hub for the biggest east-west interstate and the biggest north-south interstate. Transportation is a big thing here. I've got a hub for every single one of the shipping carriers here. One of the biggest Midwest mail processing facilities is in Des Moines. So I can ship, you know, all over the country in a fairly reasonable amount of time, regardless of whether I'm shipping to the East Coast or the West Coast. And logistically, that becomes a real power thing for us. I think that's a good advantage. Plus, the people are great. I mean, I have to tell you, I mean, we have a great staff. I love working with these people, and, you know, us Midwesterners are friendly.
To your face. Okay, Chard Knight wants to know, in what year do you expect that you'll finally run out of Cybuster DVDs?
Well, shoot. Probably a while. There's several. Apparently, he's not a big fan of Cybuster.
I guess not. Well, is anyone really? I'm sure there are a few. We got a lot of people asking if you had any comment on the closing of Anime Nation.
Well, I mean, I tell you, back in the day, there were several of us that were in the market, back before there was mass market retail for anime. And I worked with Gene for many years and had a very good relationship with him and his wife, and it was a friendly competition, and we would get together at conventions sometimes and just sit and shoot the bull. And you know, I think that it's a loss to have another one of the longer term players leave the market. But you know, I certainly understand where he is coming from, and if it wasn't a business that he felt that was going to do well for him, I mean, you need to sometimes make a decision what you want to do in life and go forward. I mean, I've always had a lot of respect for those guys. It's unfortunate. Worked with them for a long time, and I'm sorry to see them go.
Yeah, they were around for quite a while. It's a bit of a shame, but you know, you had to wonder whether or not there was space for that many retailers in the first place. I don't know.
Well, I mean, definitely the market for anything in this type of product line is more complicated now than it has been in the past.
Right.
I mean, there's more competition for the individual consumers, anime dollar. I mean, there's a lot of different forms of entertainment now besides anime that people can consume. And, you know, you add to that, you know, all the streaming stuff and games on your phone, and there's only so many dollars that people have to spend on this type of product, and sometimes it can be, you know, complicated to grow that business. You know, I think we've done well in terms of the service to the customer, and I think that really is one of the things that's kept us at the lead of the pack, is just making sure that those people are satisfied and happy, and when their product shows up, it's not all smashed up.
Right. Yeah, you have that ridiculous, like, giant insulating layer of paper and cardboard in there that makes sure my stuff is never fucked up, that's for sure.
Well, if you buy a $200 DVD set, I imagine you're not going to be real pleased if it comes with all scratched up and dents on it.
This is true. You know, those those really thin Amazon bubble mailers don't quite do the job. All right, a lot of questions about this, but South Pacific Mal wants to know about potential Blu-ray releases in the Nozomi line specifically. He also mentions he likes subbed-only releases because they're cheaper. But, yeah, Blu-ray releases, a lot of people asking about it.
Well, and I understand that. I mean, frankly, I mean, I know why people want to have Blu-rays, and I've said some of this, and every time that it comes up, I watch the forum threads explode. It's kind of interesting, but right. The fact of the matter is, you have to look at what the product is going to sell, And if the product is going to sell, you know, only a certain number of pieces, well, then making Blu-rays and putting them out in the market really doesn't make economic sense. Now, there's certain titles that I do feel that we definitely need to look at that. I mean, we are exploring that. I mean, we've been looking at trying to see what we can put together into 2015. But the fact of the matter is that there are a number of these titles that just doesn't make a lot of sense to put Blu-rays out for. Now, there's other titles which I'd love to put Blu-rays out for. For example, I've mentioned at conventions before, if I was going to put out a Blu-ray, I'd love to do Tyler first. But materials-wise for Tyler, it's very difficult for us to do that because the materials just aren't available in high definition. So then you're kind of caught into this, well, how do I make my Blu-ray look really, really pretty? It's definitely something we work on and that we are considering, and I think we'll probably be moving in that direction. Because that's what the customers want, but we have to be careful in terms of what we are spending on some of these releases to make them consistently profitable. If we start losing money on releases, then, you know, obviously I can't take that money, turn around, and buy other releases, and that's really what I want to focus on.
Yeah. I wonder if the market for Tyler still exists enough to make a Blu-ray even profitable. Like, I don't know.
Now, how can you diss on Tyler? I mean, seriously.
That's not a diss, that's a numbers thing.
It's a classic
Tyler show. Tyler is awesome. But if you haven't bought Tyler, I think you should. It's great.
One of your 50,000 releases of it?
Well, I think we've only done three, but that's all right. And I, you know, that's, again, if you go back to the kind of quality releases and stuff, I mean, that Tyler box that we initially put out had the hardbound books in it and CDs and everything. I mean, that was a really cool collector's release.
Yeah,
really
nice.
I was real proud of that.
Those are the little CD-sized ones, right?
What's that?
Those were like half. They were like a CD-sized box.
Yeah, it was a little cube.
Yeah, those were neat. I liked those. That's the kind of weird packaging like that. I'd like to see more of that, but no one seems to want to do it.
Well, people are frustrated about that because they don't fit on the shelves. I mean, I see that sometimes people complain like about NIS's releases because they come in those big hardbound boxes.
Yeah, but that doesn't fit.
I mean, I think they're really, really nice, but I, you know, when you're trying to display stuff, I mean, I understand where people come from on it.
Well, but that doesn't fit on any reasonable shelf, but those little cubes totally did. Or you could stack them. Anyway, String Sonata asks,
I still have Tyler on the phone system if you call in. We love it.
Yeah, I know.
We just heard.
We had to call in. String Sonata wants to know how well are figures like the Aniplex Plus exclusives specifically doing sales-wise?
Actually, remarkably well. I mean, it depends on the figure. Some figures are doing better than others, but, you know, specifically the Madoka figures have done really, really well. That's going to be a very busy day in the warehouse when those show up.
Okay. A lot of people asking about, they want specific numbers, obviously, you've already mentioned you can't reveal those, but people asking about how the pre-orders for Sailor Moon are going.
Well, we sold out of our gift with purchase for the Sailor Moon, which I was really, you know, surprised how quickly that happened. It still sells very, very strong, and you know, kind of with that same comment, it's going to be an enormously busy day in the warehouse when those show up.
If you don't mind saying, like, how quickly did those sell out?
Oh, I want to say we were out of the gift with purchase within like 3 or 4 weeks.
Huh, not bad. So
I mean,
so
it's real strong. I mean, I've got more stuff like that when the next set of releases come through as well. But, you know, there's been a lot of pent-up demand for that show.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of pent-up demand. I mean, people have wanted to have that show come back out for a long, long time, and that big, giant ADV uncut box set video quality wasn't, it wasn't really super.
The everything quality on that wasn't really super.
And, you know, I've seen the discs on the Blu-rays for this title, and they are fantastic. I mean, they're very, very crisp and clear.
Cool. All right. Spaceman Hardy asks, I miss your dubbed releases, but I understand why you stopped doing them. If one day, however, you were able to license a show that sold extremely well, would you consider re-releasing a bilingual version in the future, similar to what Sentai and NIS have done?
Well, absolutely. We would definitely do that. I mean, it would be nonsensical not to. It just hasn't been something that we've run across yet, based on the type of shows we've been releasing as of late.
Chuodori wants to know what percentage of your annual sales would you roughly guess are from non-U.S. customers?
If you include Canada in that mix, it's a decent sized percentage. But I right off the top of my head, I wasn't prepared for that, so I don't have that.
Oshon now. You know, tell us now.
Yeah, we do sell an awful lot. You know, Canada will be our number one non-U.S. destination.
Okay. Just a few left here. Miles Gator asks, is there a correlation between the age of the buyer and the age of the franchises that they buy?
Yes.
Beardos buy Beardo shows.
I mean, I don't know how to really elaborate on that. We've kind of talked about that as we've gone through the show today. But yeah, there definitely is a correlation to that.
All right, and I guess...
There's a lot of really older people that like the Critical Mass titles.
Well, they better be over 18, Sean.
Yeah, they definitely are over 18.
People who still buy physical pornography.
I'm amazed at how much of the Anime 18 library you've managed to reassemble.
You're like, no comment.
that was like... every time I look and just kind of see what you've been releasing, you know, because like Chris Beveridge posts a photo or something of his new shipment, I'm just like, oh my God, so many PTSD flashbacks.
Yeah, what's
so that's essentially really the reason that you're amazed is because it's making you hurt.
Of course.
Yeah. What's the gift with purchase on your re-release of Cool Devices?
Yeah, I don't even want to guess what that would be.
It is, in fact, a cool device.
That's creepy. Let's move on.
Yeah, okay. Last question here from Daniel Dayberg. Any interesting trends with holiday sales? Anything you see sell more during the holiday season, aside from just overall everything, like anything that sells particularly well during the holidays?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Holiday sales. I mean, we certainly like the holiday. Holiday is fun. Sales-wise, there are a lot of people that pick up things that are cataloged during sales more than when you sell during the rest of the year, the catalog sales percentage as a total percentage of the sales versus like new releases is smaller than the catalog sales that happen at Christmas. That is a trend that I have noticed. So I think that's really, really interesting. Beyond that, obviously sales are significantly higher. I'm not really sure how to answer this one. That's one of the trends I have noticed. The number of people that buy larger quantities at a time is certainly higher. I have noticed also this last couple of years, people are waiting way too long to buy this stuff. And you saw that last year where every one of the shipping carriers really kind of got barfed because people waited to the day before the last day and wanted it there, next day air, and they couldn't deal with the command or the demand of the boxes being put into their system. So that's I'm trying to figure out some interesting ways to make it more fun for people to buy a little earlier this year.
Okay, all right, sounds good. Okay, that actually wraps us up. Can't thank you enough for giving us the update after another year. It's always great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for coming by.
Yeah, no problem. I always enjoy being on the show and talking to you guys about what's going on.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Sean for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check it out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating or review. We would really appreciate it. We'll see you all next week.